College football nerds, we are here talking Iowa and Penn State, the game of the week in college football. It's going to be a lot of fun. I want to remind y'all, if you're new here, in the comments, you got to give us your score. Rules are rules, and you know we did kind of create them, but we back up our points with looking at your points and getting in there and mixing it up with you in the comments. That's something we're really known for. It's a lot of fun. So give us your score. And while you're down there, hit that subscribe, hit that like, hit that notification bell. One other thing. We do a live show on Saturday night. We talk about the action while it's happening, and we talk about what happened during the day. They run pretty long, 1 to 2 hours. We do a podcast version if you want to. The link's in the description. Hear us, not watch the YouTube replay, but it's also available on YouTube. All right, all that's out of the way, Josh. Let's talk Iowa. Let's talk Penn State. You know, a lot of people have been getting at us on Twitter about Iowa because we really like what we see defensively, and we've been pumping them up all year on the defensive side of the ball. And they say, Josh, Daniel, Iowa is a beneficiary of a lot of turnovers. And we have a computer model that we'll break out later. And a lot of modelers don't love trying to bake in turnover points. And we're followed by a lot of people in the analytics community. And they have all said similar things. But Josh, at this point in the season, with the number of turnovers we've seen and the number of points generated off those turnovers, at some point, does 2021 Iowa get into the 2016 Alabama category where they had a lot of non-offensive touchdowns that started showing up in our model, and it was pretty reliable that you could bank on those turnovers?
At some point, it does become a trend. A lot of advanced stats have some version of a havoc rate. We don't necessarily generate a discrete stat like that. But our model does start to eventually say, okay, I'm going to kind of assume you're going to get points through other, you know, non-offensive touchdowns and the like. And I think Iowa's kind of gotten to that point. Iowa defensively has moved to the same philosophies that a lot of other defenses have around the country. It's the same sort of thing Arkansas has done. There's a lot of zone. There's a lot of light boxes. And the thing is, if you can defend the run and drop players, and when I say defend the run, you can give up some yardage, but if you can defend the run effectively while dropping players against these RPO schemes, which are sort of read-based, there's just a lot of traffic, and teams tend to turn the ball over. Same thing, you know, Arkansas caused Ole Miss to turn it over six times, six interceptions they had from Matt Corral last year, and I don't think it's an accident or coincidence. And that's what Iowa's doing, and because Iowa's front has been so good, they're able to really stymie the run, if not shut it down, just by virtue of, you know, the sort of fronts they have. It's not to say they're exclusively zone. I mean, they ran man coverage too, but you know, they are yet to give up 100 yards rushing in the game. And it's pretty crazy to think that they're yet to give up 100 yards rushing when you watch them, they play a lot of light boxes. And that is why the turnovers are what they are. If you can do that, if you can play a light box and defend the run, now you can make someone throw into a crowd when you want to. Now, if you want to bring pressure, they're probably going to be overwhelmed when you do that. And that creates havoc. And that's what Iowa has going for them as an offensive identity, and our defensive identity, I should say, and it's real. But a little bit of it is competition level. And then, you know, I don't know if you want to touch on that now or the model, but it's definitely a factor for both teams. And balancing it's hard, even though I do think it is part of Iowa's MO at this point.
So I do want to get into competition level, but I don't want to make everybody watching us mad yet. We'll get into the model for that. And I do want to touch a little bit on Penn State, and maybe this does come at a competition level. Penn State fans have been on us this year a good bit, and some of it is because they're new to our channel and don't really understand or really realize how much we scrutinize elite teams, elite plus teams. And we're talking about, if you're going to be up there ranked with Alabama and Georgia, we're going to scrutinize you and we're going to look under the hood like we do with Alabama and Georgia. If you want us to consider you a nice team, having a nice season and, you know, 15th in the country, then that's something we'll maybe go a little soft, but we've pointed out some things that concern us. One, Wisconsin's not a great football team right now. Now, they've played three top 15 FBS teams, and they've lost to them. They're better than their record shows, but they're not a good football team. Auburn is not a good football team either. And you've got 2 one-score wins there. that to us start to ring alarm bells when we're talking about in the context of playoffs and winning your conference and competing with an Alabama or Georgia. That's where we lose some Penn State fans, although some put up with us and they come to the chat every Saturday night, and you know who you are, we appreciate it. But Josh, putting all of that, maybe not aside, but in context of this year, isn't it fair to say Penn State is undefeated right now? It could be Clemson, where they're barely beating Georgia Tech and losing to NC State, but it's not. They're undefeated. And in a year where it's feeling like 2007, isn't that worth something in terms of evaluating them as a football team?
There really aren't complete teams right now. And we've noted flaws because Penn State is currently number four. And if you want to be number four and you want to be in the playoffs, those flaws are really important. But we're not saying Penn State's a bad team. We're just trying to nitpick them because assuming you want to hold yourself to a championship caliber. To your point, football is also a relative sport. And one of the things that drives us up a wall is when people talk about why X team should or shouldn't be in the playoffs or top 10 or something. And then they'll say, well, you know, but this team got in the playoffs this year. And why did this team get in the playoffs in 2017 when this other team didn't get in 2016? Every year's different. You don't win the all-time college football playoff national championship. You win the whatever year national championship. And some years, frankly, teams are a lot better than other years. Right now, there aren't a whole lot of teams that look really good on both sides of the ball at all times. If you look at, you know, Iowa 3, Penn State 4, who are your next teams? Cincinnati at number 5, who looks sketchy on the defensive side of the ball, or excuse me, offensive side of the ball. I think the defense is good, but I'm not sure they're tested. You look at Oklahoma, who's had one score win the entire year against teams that aren't awesome. Ohio State's defense has looked really shaky. Oregon's offense looks pretty dependent on the run without a lot of vertical passing game. And then you got like Michigan at 9, BYU at 10, Michigan State at 11. All these teams are flawed. And to your point, like Kentucky just beat Florida. And if you want to say, well, what Penn State has all these problems, and I think we're right to say Wisconsin may not necessarily be a good team, but I do think Penn State's probably better than Kentucky right now. And if Kentucky can beat Florida, why can't Penn State beat Florida? So as much as we're nitpicking based off our own perceptions of what it usually takes to win a national title, this year, with what it means to be a top five team, Penn State and Iowa, for that matter, both have as many boxes checked as anybody in the country.
And that's our thing. Like, we can be critical and nitpicky, but we also contextualize everything. And our big frustration is, and namely with Ohio State fans who say, well, we didn't get in and Alabama didn't win their division and they got in. Although I will remind everybody here knows that Ohio State got in a year where they didn't win their division too, but that's another story for a different day. All right. So Josh, let's get into the model. I know it's a little wacky, but I want you to touch on why it's wacky and really what it's picking up on. So let's go ahead and get into the model maybe a little earlier than we normally do and kind of pivot our discussion off of that.
So we've generated this model that is trying to evaluate your team relative to who you've played, and then it bases that on how your teams you play did against everybody else. Basically, you know, are you better or worse than average competition, if you want to look at it that way, with more complexity, of course. And when you look at it through that lens, I think it sometimes fleshes out some interesting facts. Now, our score projection we're going to give you is all self-taught. I don't influence the model. When I say self-taught, I mean it's like a self-learning sort of machine learning concept where I feed numbers into the model. I try not to tell it what is or isn't important, and I let the model figure out how scoring works for each team, more or less. And the goal of that isn't necessarily to get the absolute most accurate model. In truth, though, I want to get the model that's the most instructive. And what we frequently see, like when it had Arkansas blowing out Texas A&M, is it will see things that those of us with our human eye perceptions don't see. And it'll pick up on trends because it doesn't care what the name brand is. And I don't feed it like recruiting rankings. It just cares about on-field performance. And it sees things we don't see. So it's kind of something to keep us honest as much as anything. And I'll tell you, it favors Iowa, despite the fact that it doesn't favor Iowa. And what I mean by that is, you know, defensively, these teams, it feels like they're both around 85% in opponent passing averages. That's an interesting thing because that's good, not elite. I think we'll touch on that in a minute, why that is. Iowa has an awesome run defense, 60% of opponent pass rushing averages. Penn State, again, good, not elite, 85% of opponent rushing averages. And in that context, even though Penn State has better offensive numbers and stats than Iowa, the defensive advantages it sees in Iowa basically balance out pretty well. And it sees both teams being about 4.2, 4.5 yards per play. Now, those are not great numbers. Anything below 4 yards per play is going to usually be pretty anemic. And ideally, you want about 5 yards per play, or four, at least over 4.5 to move your offense well. You need over 7.5 yards per attempt for an offense to be competent passing the ball. Neither team manages 6.5. You need about 4 yards per carry to be competent running it, and neither team is expected to average 3. So the output is really anemic on the from an offensive perspective. The interesting thing is that it has the score 30-11. And you might say, well, why is that? Because it has Penn State with more yardage. It says they'll average 4.5 yards per carry. Iowa will average about 4.25. And the reason is turnovers. The reason is the fact that it looks at Iowa's production and it says, you know what? Iowa has been able to generate points without a lot of yards. Iowa finds a way to score on the defensive side of the ball. And frankly, I think that at some level, it's also noting, you know, Penn State and Clifford and the way their offense works, it's a little herky-jerky. And the odds of Iowa getting some scores, and if it doesn't necessarily say this, but I think in reality, it's almost saying like, hey, this is going to be a 10-13 game at the half where Penn State makes a mistake or two, gets down, you know, 23-10, and then you get a late score that makes it 30-10 at the end of regulation. So it's interesting in that the score is heavily favoring Iowa. And if you look at our model and people want to evaluate it later because they just flipped to the screenshot, I'll say, oh, this game ended 17-10. But if you look at the statistics, it actually thinks Penn State's going to outgain Iowa. So two tells of the tape there. What's the better performance play to play? And how does that actually relate to the score? And I think it's entirely due to the havoc rate Iowa generates and the inconsistencies Penn State have that sometimes give them issues in scoring, even though they're putting up pretty good yardage in a game.
Yeah, it's interesting to me because, you know, we did a Texas-Oklahoma preview and we talked about their stark differences in the offenses and how they work and how they need to generate points. One is more staying on schedule. One is more shot plays. In this case, in our model, and in reality, you know, if you start to consider turnovers as a function of your offense, which is really how you should think about it in terms of scoring efficiency, at some point when they do show up as a consistent thing, then it does make an seemingly anemic offense a lot more efficient in the numbers and in terms of modeling. The flip side of that is also true. Like you said, Penn State and the type of offense they run generates a lot of yardage that maybe doesn't convert to points. So they need a lot more yardage and a lot higher yards per play to generate points where Iowa is on the other end of the spectrum. So it is really counting on these turnovers.
And let me give you an example, and I'll interrupt you real quick. Against Auburn, Penn State had 5.8 yards per play and generated 28 points. And against Maryland, Iowa had 5.66 yards and generated 51 points. So even though Penn State actually per play outgained Iowa in those two games, Iowa scored almost double what Penn State did. And the game felt totally different, right? The Auburn-Penn State game and the Iowa-Maryland game. And that's what our model is seeing, is with the same yardage, these teams can feel very, very, very different.
Well, but in terms of scoring efficiency and in terms of how Iowa's going to play the more modern concept offense that Penn State runs, do you see some benefit or some opportunity there for Iowa in a way that they defended Maryland? And I'm not saying Penn State has the exact same offense, but you think about how Arkansas has a lot of success against Ole Miss. In a lot of these defenses we see, if you can't beat them straight up athlete for athlete, if you can kill them. But if you can't, then they pose a lot of problems. Could you see, because of how Iowa's going to play Penn State, a similar frustration like they gave Maryland on Friday night?
I think it's quite possible. It's interesting to me when I watch Penn State and Iowa offensively, and we talked about this before the video, I actually feel like Iowa's personnel might be better than Penn State's. And I'm sure, well, there's no way that's not going to make some Penn State fans angry. But the truth is, I love Dotson, but I also really love Goodson. I mean, Noah Cain's a good back, but he's been stuffed a couple times this year. I'm trying to think through the games. The games in play, but looking at Cain, yeah, 2 yards per carry, 2.3 yards per carry, 2 yards per carry. Hasn't hit 4 yards per carry since the opener when he had 8 carries. Iowa gets theirs, and I feel like the receivers don't have necessarily major standouts. And when I'm talking about that, I mean top five level standout first round draft pick receivers, but it's a solid receiving core. And, you know, passing the ball, Iowa has been reasonably productive under Petras. I mean, he's not wowing you, but he's been good enough to operate the offense. The difference to me more than anything is that Penn State is a lot more modern than Iowa offensively. And I think sometimes people rag the coaches at Penn State. And the funny thing is I have like half my family are Penn State fans, and I've told people that before. So I'm not a Penn State hater. It's actually all my wife's family. I have no problem with Penn State. I've watched a lot of Penn State football. But their coaching staff actually, I think, is getting a lot more production out of the players than maybe they should. Now, you can maybe ding them for development or ding them for evaluation, but Dotson is a really high-level player, and outside him, you got a viable starter in Cain and not a whole lot else that's, if you're talking top five team, not a heck of a whole lot else that is normal for a top five team. But they're very modern. They run RPO concepts, what I mean by that, and they do things that cause stress for a defense, right? You don't get to do your normal run pass keys. Your safety can't react to the runner pass because you get burned by the RPO. And against a lot of man coverage schemes, that really breaks them. Going to your question, finally, the problem is Iowa has adopted these zone defense philosophies like Arkansas did. And because you're watching the quarterback and you're kind of waiting and reacting, you don't bite as hard on stuff and you wait for it to come to you. And it tends to magnify mistakes, and it also doesn't give those easy plays. And it's a way people have been able to combat that. And I think the question here, really in my mind, is whether Penn State can run the ball. Because if you can run the ball like Georgia did to Arkansas, that scheme falls apart. Ole Miss, we talked about this and when we were doing our live show. The Ole Miss game against Alabama and the Arkansas game against Georgia were really similar. And that both those teams got run over for the most part, and that whole drop defense thing that looked like it was taking hold and working really well, the problem is you got a light box. And because you got a light box, you can get destroyed if the other team's running for 6 or 7 yards a carry. Iowa's front hasn't let a team do that, but if they can manage it against Penn State and drop guys, all those modern concepts turn into turnovers. If they can't do it, and the safety does have to walk down, now stuff starts to break and Penn State starts to score. And I think that's really the inflection point of the game, in my view. I think Iowa's going to get theirs. Now, I'll say they're a lot more traditional. I think that makes them a lot easier to defend. And that I think if they ran Penn State's scheme, they might actually be a lot more successful because of that. It magnifies the defense's effectiveness. But to me, this game really comes down to whether or not Penn State can run the ball. And their ability to do so is going to determine whether or not they can actually generate points, almost regardless of the number of yardage they put up.
Yeah, and right now, in terms of my pick, I'm going to say they can't. And one of the things we haven't talked about yet is Kinnick. And this is, for all of the accolades that we rightly and justifiably gave Beaver Stadium, Kinnick is another one of those places that is just really hard to play, and it's probably worth 5 or 6 points. I think it's hugely underrated, and we're in SEC country. A lot of fans down here don't know about it. They should. And I think that's going to make things hard for Penn State, where they had the advantage against Auburn of playing at home. They are on the flip side here and going on the road. I don't think they're going to be able to run the ball against Iowa. And I'm not sold on Clifford being a guy, although he's put up pretty good numbers in terms of yards per attempt. I'm not sold on him being as efficient as he's going to need to be, especially in the red zone, to convert the points that he's going to need. So give me Iowa 24, Penn State 17, and then tell me what you got.
I have Iowa 23-13. I'll just lead off with that. And it goes back to some things I've been talking about a lot. And I know I've drawn... Look, I've drawn a lot of Penn State ire the past couple years. And I know fans are going to want to say this, but I haven't necessarily been wrong. I have thought that Penn State has been a top 15 team, but they keep wanting to creep into this top five realm. And I start to say, look, this is not the seventh or eighth best team in the country. It makes people mad, and then they drop a game, or it becomes obvious that they're more like a team between 10 and 20. Honestly, right now, I think that's still the case. The problem with Penn State, with all their wins, I say a passing game to be competent needs to have 7.5 yards per attempt. That's about the mark for a competent, and when I say competent, I mean functional passing game. None of Penn State's opponents average more than 6.5 yards per attempt. That's the mark. I say 6.5 below becomes non-functional. Every team Penn State's played is non-functional in the passing game. And if you look in the run game, 3 of 4 opponents fail to hit 4 yards of carry on the season. And the fourth was Auburn, and they only are at that mark really because they played Akron and ran for 10 yards per carry in that game. I say that. They've been more like 4 or 5 yards per carry. But Penn State held Auburn to 4.5 yards per carry, and the next week Auburn ran for 4.7 against Georgia State. The point is, I really do think the competition level from Penn State has been quite poor. I have said that over and over again. This model, which is in no way based off that statement, is essentially saying the exact same thing. It doesn't respect Penn State because it doesn't care their name or the names of their opponents. It says those opponents haven't actually played very well. And that shows up in Penn State's defensive statistics, which I'll be curious to see whether or not they can prove themselves. And that's that they're an 85% run defense and an 85% pass defense. Those numbers are merely good. We usually say 90% is really the mark for average because there's enough UNLV kind of teams in there that your numbers are always a touch inflated. An elite defense is below 70% on most of these statistics, especially in run defense. Like Clemson, when they were at their peak, when they had that awesome defensive line in like 2016, 2018, they were in the 50s. So I think Iowa wins this game. I think it's going to be low scoring and brutal. I think probably Iowa ends up with a turnover to win late. I think Penn State is going to really have to prove themselves against what I think is a much better team than anyone they've played to date. And ultimately, I will say if it's this low scoring, big plays and turnovers, just like we said with Oklahoma and Texas, are going to be super determinative. If you've got a score below 20 points and someone, you know, like Kentucky, Florida example, someone blocks a field goal and runs it back for a touchdown, that 10-point swing will win the game by itself. Those plays are almost completely unpredictable. And I think, like I always say, I don't evaluate our picks based off the final score, really. I evaluate it based off the score at the start of the fourth quarter. And if my pick backdoor covers or something, I'll take the W, but the truth is I got lucky. The best I can do is sort of tell you what position you'll be in going in the fourth quarter, and I can't possibly guess those flip plays. And I do think because these defenses are pretty good and the scoring will be pretty low, the variability here is quite high, and a major event play like a pick six at the goal line will absolutely win the game for one team or the other.
All right, well, that's it for us on Iowa and Penn State. I agree with Josh that this is, you know, a considerably better opponent than maybe either one of these teams have played to this point in this season. It'll be fun to watch. Let us know again in the comments what you think the score is going to be. And y'all, hit that like, hit that subscribe. Helps us out a ton. Thanks so much, y'all. Have a great week. And God bless.